Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Michael Marsolek here in Studio B at Montana Public Radio for another special session. I have two fine musicians joining me today. They'll be performing this weekend at St. Timothy's at the Summer Music Festival. It's a 4 p.m. show up at Georgetown Lake above the lake at St. Timothy's Chapel. The I-90 Collective will be performing, and joining us here in our studio today is Carrie Krause. Carrie is the concertmaster of the Bozeman Symphony and a Baroque musician performing with a lot of different groups. John Lenti is a lutenist and performs in a number of places and lives in Seattle. Welcome to Montana Public Radio.
Good to be here.
Thank you so much.
Well, you were both in Montana for the Montana Baroque Music Festival, which took place in July, and certainly live in the world of period instruments and Baroque music, and you're going to play a little bit for us today. Can I ask just a little bit about what drew you to this music? As a violinist, Carrie, you know, people specialize in different kinds of things. You certainly have been drawn to early music and Baroque music, and I'd ask the same for you, John. Maybe start with you, Carrie.
I guess what drew me to it initially was the sense of honesty and kind of lack of ego that's present in the sound of the gut strings, and more of the kind of sense of just discovery of the music rather than having to live up to this tradition passed along from your teacher. You know, there's so much unknown about this music that even though it's very old, it feels very fresh and very personal. And also the dance element of it as well. Dance music is very present in Baroque music, and that feeling of it being this like very physical relationship with the music I love.
Music that was so tied to life at that time, pre-recording, so it was all live. It was all connected somehow to life, right?
Right, yeah, and it wasn't really intended to be performed beyond when it was composed or when it was sort of improvised by the musicians at the time and happened to be written down.
You've played with lots of different groups, Apollo's Fire and the different Baroque ensembles on the coast. I'm going to get to the I-90 thing here in a minute, but I love the fact that there are many groups now and certainly a resurgence of interest in early and Baroque music and lots of different interpretations of exploring what the music could be in today's age, right?
Absolutely. I think people can really bring your own individual voice to it because there's no way that we can know how it sounded back then. So you do everything you can to gather inspiration from the resources that exist. But ultimately, you have to make a lot of decisions in the moment about what the music is about, what you're expressing.
And John, you've been heard on a number of broadcasts on Performance Today and Harmonia and other groups. Seattle Baroque Orchestra, of course, I-90 Collective. You're a Baroque guitarist as well as a lutenist who'll play some lute for us today. What drew you to this? How did you end up not playing six-string steel guitar?
I do still play six-string steel guitar, but I was a classical guitarist, made my way through high school and college that way. And the thing is, classical guitarists can play music that was written for the lute the same way pianists can play Bach that was written for the harpsichord. I just got to the point where I wasn't playing any guitar music anymore. Sometime during college, I set aside all of the sexy Spanish stuff and focused entirely on Renaissance music. So my dad actually told me, "Son, you ought to get a lute." Luckily, there was a guy in Asheville, North Carolina. I was at school in North Carolina at the time. There was a guy in Asheville who made terrific lutes. So I got on his list and got my first lute immediately after my graduating recital. And started teaching myself to play. The particular kind of lute that I'm playing today is called a theorbo, which is a great big bass lute. You know, initially I was playing the small lute, like you see in pictures of wandering troubadours and like you see in with angels and Christmas cards and stuff. But over time, I moved over more to playing the theorbo because the theorbo is sort of the big Baroque accompanying lute. It's the lute for playing chamber music, for accompanying songs, for playing in orchestras and things like that.
And it has 15 strings, right?
Or almost. It's got 14.
14 strings.
Yeah, seven short strings you play like a guitar, and then seven long strings that sound like the low end of a harp, which your listeners will hear when Carrie and I play.
Right. So they're used as kind of drone strings then, or do they sympathetically vibrate as well?
They do sympathetically vibrate, but not appreciably. they're really for playing. So that's where all of the low thunks that you're going to hear are going to come from.
You have something selected for us, a couple of movements by Arcangelo Corelli, right?
Yes. First movement and the third movement.
And this is the...
Opus 5, number 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the best key, D major.
Thank you.
Kerry Krause and John Lenti are here with us in Studio B at Montana Public Radio. Two movements there. Music of Corelli from the Opus 5, Sonata Number 1. You're with the I-90 Collective. I would love to hear how this collaboration began and how it's continued. There's been multiple players over time, and it's a group of musicians that love to get together and play early music in some way, right?
Exactly. Kerry and I got to know each other by playing in the Seattle Baroque Orchestra about 10 years ago. We just found that we were very simpatico, and we sought out opportunities to play together, and luckily Kerry's an incredible self-starter who wants to make things happen in Montana, so she invited me and another musician from Seattle out to play sonatas for a couple weeks in Montana to get together in Bozeman, rehearse a little bit, and then undertake a great big concert tour, playing in people's living rooms and I think a couple churches and out at Quinn's Hot Springs. And for us, it was, I don't know, it's the beginning of a great musical love affair. Also, the opportunity to spend time in the most beautiful places in the world. We've done this every summer for the past 8 years, and personnel have changed, so it's now been sort of consistent for the past few years that it's Kerry and myself, and we're joined by another wonderful violinist called Adrian Post, and her husband Paul Dwyer, who's a superb Baroque cellist and modern cellist. He plays in the Chicago Lyric Opera Orchestra. I guess that's been the past 5 or 6 years that it's been the four of us, and for me, at least, it's a highlight of my musical year because we play serious, beautiful, gorgeous music for really appreciative audiences several times in a row, which is kind of the dream gig.
So, in small spaces.
And in small spaces. So it's called chamber music, you know, and we're playing it in generally great big living rooms because one of the other great things about Montana is that every town had a boom at some point during an era when architecture allowed for big, beautiful ballrooms on the bottom floor of your pretty Victorian house. And so there are these terrific rooms with wood panels that you get to play in. And yeah, like I say, it's kind of the highlight of my musical year.
So two violins, cello, and lute, that gives you quite a bit of flexibility to play a lot of that early chamber music, right?
Yes, there's a lot of repertoire written for that combination. Trio sonatas is the name, really, for that arrangement. So this summer we're going to be featuring music from northern Italy and kind of tracing its cross of the Alps into Germany and also into England, because the Italians were hugely popular for their passionate approach to music and their virtuosity as well.
We have a couple pieces to play today by Nicola Matisse.
Matisse.
Nicola Matisse is an example, I guess, of the kind of Italian style of violinists. Can you describe the difference as a violinist of what is the Italian style as it came in?
Well, I guess it's primarily virtuosity, playing fast, playing high, being very experimental on the instrument in terms of varied patterns, as opposed to the French style, which is about being lovely and beautiful and refined. And then in England, Matisse was an interesting character because he was in England. That's where he became famous and published his music and had his career. So he was your quintessential exported Italian working in England.
Well, the next piece you have for us is Aria Amorosa, right? By Matisse. Thank you. That was Aria Amorosa by Nicola Mateis. Joining me in studio today is Carrie Krause, a violinist, and lutenist John Lenti. They're performing a bit this afternoon as we are anticipating the finale concert for St. Timothy's Music Summer Season. The concert is Sunday at 4 p.m. on August 20th at St. Timothy's Chapel above Georgetown Lake. I often am curious about the importance of performing this music on period instruments and how many ensembles are very religious about that. Do you have a strong feeling about that?
I think it's less about trying to recreate what it would have been like back then, because there's absolutely no way that we can know. I mean, just knowing how much music changed in the past 100 years and thinking 300 years ago, there's just no way to know. So the reason I think for playing on period instruments is it's inspiring. Like it fuels your personal commitment to the instrument and your ability to relate to the other musicians that you're playing with in a more immediate way. And to me, it just makes the music come alive in a way that I can't get on my modern instrument playing the same repertoire.
So do you shift back and forth then quite a bit?
I do, yeah, because I'm concertmaster in Bozeman, the Bozeman Symphony. Right. So I end up playing modern violin about probably a little over half the time, depending on the repertoire, of course, is the reason to choose the instrument and which bow. The way that the bow can articulate on the strings is very different than a modern bow on steel strings. It's a little bit similar to fiddling, too, in that the physical approach to the instrument has to be more relaxed, and the technique is not as demanding, so it's more about sort of being free and adding ornaments and kind of speaking with your instrument versus singing, although you sing as well, saying something.
Mm-hmm. John?
Well, in my case, I'm entirely in the historical performance world. Unless I'm forced to, I don't really step much beyond about 1750 with the music that I play, because there's not a modern lute. I don't know. I guess the novelty of the low bass strings on the theorbo hasn't worn off. The novelty of getting to improvise all the time, because improvisation is almost everything I do. The challenge renews itself every time I do anything, and yet my intuitive grasp of this incredibly arcane thing that I started to do when I was in my mid-20s is getting better all the time. And as the years go by, I find it more and more enriching and more enveloping.
You've got a solo piece that you've arranged for us next. And
oh, yes.
As a lutenist, you are in the role of accompaniment quite a bit.
Generally my milieu, yeah.
Yeah.
I spend most of my time backing people up, which I really do kind of prefer as a way of life.
So in the day, was the instrument used as a solo instrument much?
It certainly was. You know, it was primarily an accompanist. But for the lute, there is a voluminous solo repertory. For the particular lute I'm playing today, the theorbo, there's a much smaller solo repertory, but there certainly is one. But in the case of the piece that I'm going to play for you, it's what I imagine lute players must have done at the time. There were songs that were very, very popular, that were often written down in many different manuscripts, and lots of people must have been singing them. This particular song that I'm going to play is one called Mark How the Blushful Morn by Nicholas Lanier, and it's a tune that I find absolutely gorgeous. It also has very racy words, and so isn't always appropriate for concert performance in a vocal setting. But this way I get to hear the tune, and I get to play it. I just accompanied it so many times over the years that it just sort of seeped into my bones that, you know, I had the chords down and then I had the tune. So I turned it into a solo theorbo piece because it seemed to me to suit the smoky character of the instrument and the beautiful, haunting nature of the tune.
And here's that arrangement of Mark How the Blushful Morn by Nicholas Lanier, John Lenti performing. Thank you. John Lenti performing an arrangement of Mark How the Blushful Morn by Nicholas Lanier here at Studio B at Montana Public Radio. The I-90 Collective will be performing this Sunday at 4 p.m. at St. Timothy's Music Festival. sttimothysmusic.org is the website for more information. We also have information at our website at mtpr.org. Can you say a little bit more about the program you're putting together and what to expect at St. Timothy's on Sunday?
We're going to be playing, like Carrie said, we're going to be doing Northern Italian music and sort of exploring its cross into Germany. And there's almost no way of talking about Baroque music that doesn't sound faintly academic until you actually get in there and start listening. The way that I generally phrase it to audience members is, well, we do this weird thing for a living and we owe you an explanation. So a big part of the way we try to present these programs is that we put the music in some kind of context, give you a story, give people something to ruminate upon, put them in the emotional world of the Baroque period. It was a time of incredible political upheaval. The religious conflicts between Catholics and Protestants in England were pretty hot, and the political situation in England, everybody was getting overthrown all the time. A lot of the time that Matthias would have been in England would have been very, well, just unstable politically. Meanwhile, on the continent, of course, there was the 30 Years' War, and the effects of that were still being felt, and it was a close-to-the-bone sort of time. And I think that people's emotional lives would have had much deeper trenches and higher peaks than maybe we can imagine these days. Plus, when we talk about these composers who were traveling across the Alps, when these Italian guys left Mama and Papa, they could be reasonably assured they would never taste another meatball. They were going to another country, which was, in many cases, permanent. Long distances were so hard to travel, and there they were striking out to make their fortune, probably having a ball, but nevertheless, you imagine the kind of homesickness that these guys must have experienced. Maybe looking around Montana, you can think the same thing when you figure that people came out here to settle 100 years ago, leaving behind everything somewhere to the east. It's a fantastic and highly improvisatory idiom that these composers were working in, and so every listener can be assured that even if they are familiar with the music, which not even I am, so I highly doubt it, even if they are familiar with the music, it'll be a brand new experience.
Can you say something more about the improvisation that happens in the early music? It was so much a part of the performance world for the musicians of the time, right?
I've had the experience of working with harpsichordists that have been playing off of a realized part. So they'll have that simple bass line, single notes. And then some editor will have taken it and written out the chords, you know, given suggestions for things for them to do. And there's just absolutely no comparison in working with somebody who's improvising something off of a bass line versus playing off of a realized written out part. It's just completely, completely different style. It's so rigid to work with somebody who's playing off of a realized part versus when I'm playing with John. I mean, he's not accompanying. I mean, I'm accompanying him as much as he's accompanying me. It's responding to what each other is doing.
Yeah, it seems like the music just breathes differently in the moment as you're performing. There's a give and take, an interaction between the musicians that I think is different with this music, don't you think?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
One really has to pay attention.
Violinist Carrie Krauss is with us, and lutenist John Lenti. What do you have for us last?
This will be the Chaconne of Nicola Matthäus. This is like a written-out improvisation. So I'll be playing a very simple bass line, strumming chords mostly, that repeats over and over again. I've got two bars of music that I'm going to play, I don't know, like 36 times in a row. I'll change up what I do as what Carrie does changes, but many descriptions of Nicola Matthäus' playing when he arrived in England. He showed up, nobody really knows from where. His birth and death dates are kind of unknown, he's mysterious, but he shows up, he marches into a tavern, and he starts to play. And people were terrified and amazed. He was doing things on the violin that nobody had ever heard before. He was leaping around, he was playing absolutely wild flurries of notes. evidently at first he was so proud of his abilities that he refused to play with anyone else, but eventually he was starving, and so he started playing with other people. But when we play this piece, I imagine that it's kind of as though Matthäus had marched into a tavern and there was some guy with a guitar or a lute, and he said, "Lay down a little chaconne groove for me," and then pulls up his violin, and it sounds something like this.
This is John Lenti and Kerry Krause in Studio B here at Montana Public Radio. Thank you. was The Chaconne by Nicola Mateis, performed in Studio B here at Montana Public Radio by Kerry Krause, violinist and lutenist John Lenti. And John, we wanted to mention too, you'll be coming to Montana again, performing this weekend, of course, but also performing with the String Orchestra of the Rockies in November.
Yes, yeah, I'm very, very glad that I get to come back in a few months. I've never been here in November, so you know, I'll need a coat, I guess. I'm going to be playing with String Orchestra of the Rockies, doing a mixed program of a whole bunch of different kinds of lute stuff and some orchestra music, and it's really a great privilege to get to join that group.
Well, we'll look forward to having you back in Montana for that. The I-90 Collective, the quartet will perform at St. Timothy's Chapel at Georgetown Lake. Information on the web at sttimothysmusic.org. And we also have more information at our website at mtpr.org. I'm Michael Marsalek. I've been joined today by Kerry Krause and by John Lenti. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.